The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Annette Bunn from Rift Accounting, and Annette has brought us a guest. Why don't you introduce your guest?
I always bring you a guest.
You always bring me a guest, and you bring me really interesting, good guests. Yes.
This one's a very quiet, reserved person.
I noticed.
Got to be really
careful. We're going to have to get him out of his shell, aren't we?
We are somehow. Yeah.
Good luck.
So I've brought David Day along today. David's an architect, works on all sorts of things. He will modestly not tell you that he's won awards and all sorts of things for some of the amazing things that he's come up with. And David and I have known each other probably not that long, actually. Although we do remember when we first met. We probably shouldn't discuss that too much.
Was it a Captain Scarlet reunion party?
It was. We first met at a networking event, which we could honestly say, I won't say where it was or whom chaired it, but it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
And we both stood there on the outskirts looking in.
thinking, why am I here? And that's the first time we ever spoke. Brandon, we had something in common, which was that we should have just gone straight home. And since then, our paths have crossed and then crossed a lot more in the last year or so David's a client and so on and so forth now. But I'll let him talk about what he does and then we can talk more about how we know each other.
Yeah. So, David, you're an architectural designer.
Got a practice over in, a studio over in Kingsnorth. Been there 15 years, designing extensions, new builds. Just been sitting, plugging away at this over the years. Really enjoy what I do. And it's just been always looking for the next big thing to come along.
Right.
And, the industry is always evolving. And, new regulations come in. We're just going through the end of the phase now where a lot of the permitted development rights, they relaxed all the regulations to get the building industry going. Well, they all end at the end of May, so there's now a rush for people to get oversized buildings in, completed and signed off before the end of May. You've got people that are living next to these people that have done that process. They're saying, well, I can't get it done by them. You're not going to get it built. So you're kind of managing expectations. So you're not just helping people realize a dream extending or whatever, but you're also looking at them. You're managing the expectation, which sometimes can be challenging.
I can imagine. Funnily enough, I had an extension built on my house 2 years ago. I didn't need an extension built on my house. I got into one of these frames of mind where I sat there and I thought, you know what, I might move. At the time, I was living on my own in a rather large house. And I thought, this is stupid. It did save me money because I didn't bother to clean. I just moved rooms.
Yeah.
And I started to look at the possibility of moving. And the cost of moving was like 55,000 quid by the time you paid your stamp duties and everything else. And I thought, I could build an extension for that.
Yeah.
And this is where...
And that's where you come in. Because you have to go out. People say, can you go out and have it? You know, can you tell me this? Can I do this? I need to see it. And I need to see it in the context of where you are. And I mean, it's no good. You've got a nice little chocolate box cottage and you want to put a big glass tower on the back. Not going to happen. And likewise, I've had people before, oh, well, I've got a flat. Can I extend that?
Yeah, of course you can. So
it does happen. You do get people. The other people you get is that move into a new estate. And the first thing they want to do is they want to extend the house. You've just moved. You've got to move to... you just don't understand some people sometimes. So that's quite interesting. But as I say, it's just all about... you've got things that come in, design changes come in. You've got... the worst call ever is on a Thursday morning. I was watching Grand Designs last night. I've seen this and you're like, oh, no, please, no. And then that's like the big thing with bifold doors. I want bifold doors, flat-roofed extensions. You're trying to get away from people putting boxes on houses to something a bit more elaborate, more fancy, a bit more contemporary. But sometimes it doesn't work.
Did you go through the phase of people wanting to build a cellar? That was a big one in London, wasn't it? It was building downwards.
I worked for a company, I did some subcontracted to a company that did those, and we did a system where you bought one house and then you got six houses either side. So you went in one house and then you dug out underneath them, and the people still lived in upstairs. It was just frightened me. And the architect that was doing those, he went no more than 10 streets. His radius was 10 streets. That was his patch. He was doing most of the extensions in that area. Interesting to see doing, but sometimes you just think, no, it's not going to work.
it's, it's kind of scary, isn't it? Because you kind of think, blimey, I wonder if some point in the future we're all going to collapse into
their basement.
You do hear his stories. You do see him every now and again in the press where they've gone in and you just think, oh, I wouldn't like to be the architect on that one.
Mm.
And then the other thing you get is people that have got a nice house and then want the kitchen dug up to put a wine cellar in. Now, that's a good.
Mm.
That's so you get the big spiral things that go in.
Yeah.
They're interesting to do.
Right, so, okay. Yeah. So, as an architectural designer, are you do mostly domestic, or is it a mixture?
It's mainly domestic, some residential, and commercial. So you've got the element of commercial, but it is mainly the domestic market. But I've done a bit of all sorts. I mean, done listed buildings in another area that I work in as well. Mm. So I think the oldest property I worked on. Done a little bit of work on St Paul's Cathedral many, many years ago.
Well, okay.
So, and then the biggest project I worked on in London was part of the team. We was on the Gherkin.
Right, okay.
Working there. That was for an interiors company.
Hmm.
And back in the day was the structural steelwork or some support work right at the top of the Lloyd's building.
Right, okay.
Where it's got all the services on the outside. So it's been quite a varied career and varied sorts of buildings, but...
Right.
Mainly I do sort of 60% residential and then another 40%, the rest of it is all bits and pieces, really.
So yeah, okay. So in the residential field, is there a particular, you know, we've talked about, you know, building downwards, we've talked about flat roof extensions and the big one at the moment is these bloody, sorry. are these glass buildings that people are all into at the moment.
Yeah. There seems to be a... It's really hard to define what people want. You've got to go and see, and you always got to get to people. You've got to have an idea of what you want and what you want to achieve for the house. It's no good me designing something that's good for me when I don't have to live with it. Mm. So I'm looking at a house at the moment, and we're actually building an extension at first floor.
Right.
Because they're happy with the layout downstairs. They just need to change it upstairs. So we've come up with a system, and I've done it on a couple of houses. Then this one goes over a driveway, so we're forming a carport. So it becomes all sorts
of... Yeah.
So we've done a couple of those, and they're just something a bit different. And you put them into the planning offices, and they come straight back to you. We like this. This is just that little bit of thinking out of the box, is rather than a two-story extension. And it's cheaper for the client. The client gets what they want, and they also get something that's just that little bit different, which when they go to sell the property, and I always say to people, you've got to look at it, design it for you, but you've got to design it that it's desirable for when you sell the property on.
Yeah.
And sometimes some people have ideas, I can make two little skinny rooms. That's no good to anybody. You'll never sell it.
Mm.
And so it is this guiding people and trying to explain to people. And the other thing you don't want to do is over-design it, that you price yourself out the street. Mm. So you're kind of, you've got your eye on all these different things to pull it together. And it's never as easy as, how much will it be? How much does it cost? Well, I need to see it, and then I can base everything around that and then customise that design for you.
Mm. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth or denigrate your clients, but do you see quite a few people that come away with the grand design? Kind of, I'm back to thinking about garden rooms. Garden rooms, these glass things are all a bit, and you can actually buy them as pre-made kind of structures now as well, can't you?
Yeah.
And I look at those and I think they look really nice in the pictures, but I've got a house, for instance, surrounded by trees, and if I put a glass anything there, within about 3 months, everything's green.
That's what you try to get explained to you. You get them to tell you what they want.
Mm.
Then you can look at it, and the experience over the years tells you, well, this work, this won't work.
Mm.
And you can gradually guide people. Some people are adamant, this is what I want to do, and those will... But some people, they will take on board your comments, you take on board your ideas, and from that, you come something in between.
Yeah.
But it's all finished, that's the best thing. So when it's all finished, then you look at it and you go, that is how I imagined it. And they're looking at it going, that is better than I imagined. That is the best bit.
Well, to be honest, that happened with my extension, because I just had the idea of my house, I needed a bigger kitchen. The kitchen I had was fine, but it was out of context with the rest of the house. Yeah. To make it a family house, you needed a bit of kitchen and stuff like that. So my idea was just to build a bit more on the back where I had the room to do it. And the guy that designed mine went, you don't want to do that. You want to make it much bigger than that. Yeah. Okay. You're just trying to get me to spend more money. He went, no, no, seriously. Yeah, because you're doing the work anyway, you'd be better off doing it like this. And I went with his ideas, and he was absolutely right. You know, it was the best thing I ever did was to let him do it bigger than it was. Funnily enough, I don't know the exact ins and outs of this, but I could dig it out. When we put in for the planning permission, in fact, the planners went, do you know what? It needs to be another 2 metres further out.
Yeah.
You're telling me to build it bigger, and I went, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes they work with you, and they're saying to you, look, it's all about proportion.
Yeah.
I've got a case going through at the moment, and it's too big, so I'm trying to get the client to scale it down, and there's been some resistance there. They're not in this area, and it's just, but I've come up with a scheme, put it into them, and they're like, yeah, I like that. Planners will accept that. So you can win these things back round.
Yeah.
Are you feel that your business really, I would imagine the planning, and forgive me if I've got this wrong, is trying to keep you in, they don't want it to be too futuristic. You're balancing between keeping it the same and trying to move things forward.
You're trying to move things forward all the time. You're always trying to just push that envelope a little bit more. Planners are always looking for change, bit of initiative shown. They just don't want boxes and boxes and boxes on backs of houses. They want to see a bit of flair to it.
They do want change.
Oh, they do want change, but it's sometimes the change has to be on their terms.
Yeah.
And you might go too far.
So subjective, right?
Yeah. But
where's the egos there?
Yeah.
But it is they do work with you. At the moment planning is a really contentious thing.
There's all sorts of issues, hasn't it?
I think there's all sorts of, there's so much going on at the moment. That the people disappear, the planners are going to work for the contractors, so the experience, and it's the process is getting better now, much better. But you've got planners in there that are new, and they're like, oh, we can make our mark. You've got the old planners in there, oh, I just want, it's who you get.
I always say this to Paul, we complain about politics and everything, and I say, look, we can't really complain about it unless you're prepared to go into the arena.
Yeah.
Would you ever think about becoming a planner so that you could have more of an impact in the community?
Well, I've got that impact in the community because I'm designing, so I'm submitting these things. So that's where, I mean, it was what we were talking about when we first came in. The design, my work is all around you, architect's work, designer's work is around you. Everywhere you look, that was designed, this was on that table. This room was designed, it was drawn somewhere, and there was an influence that's gone into it. There's also regulations you've got to put into it. It's not just a case of drawing a pretty picture and building it, it's how do you build it? And sometimes that's where some architects, like you see the bigger structures in London.
And nowadays, of course, there's also this element of sustainability and eco-friendliness that you try to build into your buildings, presumably.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads on. This talks into the way we were talking about business and how it all runs. I've been working with carbon neutral builders for the last 18 months, and I've just gone on board with them as a consultant. And that is a polystyrene, carbon neutral building made out of polystyrene, backfilled with concrete. The advantages of it, once you see the system and it's explained to you.
I'm trying to conceptualise how you build a house out of polystyrene.
We can bring them in. They're also clients.
It's basically a block, a metre long, 350 mil wide. And
is it a hollow block?
It's 150 mil of a graphite type polystyrene.
Yeah.
It's got 150 mil cavity backfilled with concrete, and then a 50 mil polystyrene on the inside, bars across the middle of it, all that polystyrene. So that's the equivalent of 12 facing bricks.
Right.
And that just literally clicks together.
Right, so you set it all by Lego.
It's similar to Lego in a way. And we can get a two-story house up, three-bed house up.
And what's the advantage of building it from polystyrene blocks?
It's carbon neutral.
Yeah.
It's... you put all the technologies into it, it's cheaper to build, so it's 70% cheaper on the build, on the materials.
Yep.
But the advantages you've got is that once you put the technologies in it, triple glazed windows, you put solar PV panels on it, you put your air recovery system in there, it runs itself.
Right.
So they're 70% cheaper to run for household bills. So the build cost will come out more or less the same to a traditional build, but the moment you start using it,
Your running costs are cheaper.
Even you sitting in the room, you're generating heat that's going to be recovered to turn into heat. And it just, you've got the solar panels on the top. We've got a development built with it. And the guy's running his electric car, solar panels.
So you can get off the grid?
You can you almost get off the grid.
That's interesting, isn't it?
My mate Raj and I, from my local Indian takeaway, we've got self-heating houses.
Mm.
Yeah, he supplies the fuel, I heat the house.
She's thinking.
But that's where
the future's going now, because, as we say, rules and regs change. And, 5 years' time, it's all new builds. There'll be no gas boilers in there. They're coming out. So you've got to get, we're getting to ahead of that curve now. This goes back to what we're saying about the high street. Everything changes. There's a change coming. It's been creeping up on us for a very long time.
Yeah. It just doesn't come out of nowhere, does it?
No.
And it's been coming, but nobody's really paid attention. There's people like this company I'm with, Creo. They've been working at this. He's been working at 15 years, developing this thing. And it's got to the stage now where it's creeping out. And it's like, we're going to go with it now.
Mm.
And it's just this wave is going to come as people wake up to it.
It's interesting, isn't it? And again, but you see where political decisions start to have ramifications. They're talking about eventually banning gas boilers. Mm. That means that you're left with only two or three other forms of heating. And the most likely is electricity. But how on earth are we going to generate all that electricity?
Well, because there's no coal.
Yeah.
There'd be no coal-powered electricity. There's nuclears.
They won't build nuclear power stations.
There's only so much wind.
Yeah.
So it goes back to solar. Then it comes back to wood. Houses will incorporate it in.
Yeah, so what interests me is the only real way forward, especially in rural areas, is to generate your own electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I think a lot of the future will be, is in generating your own electricity, whether you've got your own windmill, solar panels, whether you use...
Ground source heat pumps.
Ground source, you've got air. This one works on air. So it's no bigger than an air-conditioning unit that's parked outside. And it's just, there's no radiators.
Yeah.
So you've got more wall space. You can have as much... It's because it's triple glazed. It's soundproofed. It's quiet.
Yeah.
It's the future. I'll have a flying car next year.
For Destiny or Melody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've got a heat pump that heats my swimming pool outside, which is hilarious, this heat pump, when you see it running. In the middle of the summer, it has a little snow cloud over the top. It snows over the top of it, where it's thrown out so much cold air. Fascinating technology. Of course... All of that's great when you're talking about new stuff, but here in Kent, we've got loads of host houses, we've got loads of barns.
Yeah, barns, because there's been rules and regs changed on barns. You have the Park Q or Document Q, redundant farm buildings, disused farm buildings. So there's an opportunity now to go in, and it's very strict to get it. It's only 30% of all applicants actually get through.
Mm.
And the precept is you have to keep the concrete frame or the steel frame within the building.
Mm.
And we're just doing one at the moment at Edgerton.
Mm.
And that, is just a real... The site was interesting because the way the barn was constructed, but you have to keep the structure in there.
Mm.
And we've done that out of the Creo block.
Right.
And so there's those opportunities. And then you've got the listed buildings. Again, that's another whole different ballpark.
Sure.
And then, but you're stuck with that because you've got to work with the conservation officers. So you can't put new technologies in there. So you've got to find the craftsmen that can work on those. So it's an interesting time trying to find all these people. So.
Bats. Bats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a house where I had a loft full of bats. That was hilarious.
Yeah,
I
grew up in a house where Batman used to come and visit.
Yeah.
For a few years, sort the bats out. Yeah.
Do you know what, though? I've always had this dream of living in an industrial building. Like an old water pumping station or even a warehouse, something like that. I've always had this dream of having a house made out of an industrial building. I don't know why. I don't know where it came from. I think it's kind of fallen. Years ago, I lived in New York and I rented a loft. Yeah. And I loved that. It was brilliant. And, why are you looking at me like that?
I never knew you lived in New York.
I've lived in the US a couple of times.
Check you out.
I've lived in New York for about 5 or 6 days. And then I came home.
Before that, I lived in Pittsburgh for a while and also in Connecticut. Working there. Funnily enough, when I lived in Connecticut, I actually worked for a nuclear engineering company, the one that built Three Mile Island, as it happened.
Oh, well.
but fascinating things, buildings, especially in a rural county like Kent, where you've got this whole range of listed buildings, converted buildings like house houses and farm buildings and barns and stuff like that, and then new builds as well. I live in the country on a main road, and somebody's just got planning permission to build 30 houses next door to me. I don't have any neighbours at the moment at all. That's going to be a laugh. I can't wait for them to start building when they discover that they've actually bought a swamp to build on, because there are three underground rivers that run across the piece of ground that they bought, and I don't know if they know that, but it's going to be a hell of a job to actually build on that unless they put some heavy-duty piling down, but there you go. So it's a fascinating subject, David, and from you personally, we haven't got much time now, but from you personally, what's the bit that excites you personally? What's the bit that makes you get up in the morning and go, I love being an architectural designer, me, because I can do, you know, the twiddly bits? It's like a bit like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You've got that flexibility. You can sit there and I can pick and choose the projects I want to work on. So I find something, and it might not be the project, it might be the people I'm working for.
Right, okay.
And that's always important as well. You've got to work the people you're doing the job for, you've got to get on with, and you've got to work with them. And sometimes I've taken projects and I've worked with the people purely because they're really nice.
Yeah.
And it's not the most exciting project, but they're just, and you know when you hand it over, it's good. But it's just always that next project, it's that next challenge.
Yeah.
And it's just a rule change. Can I push it? Can I push the envelope and get that one through? So that's what the challenge is.
Do you find yourself coming in and saving people who thought they could do it themselves?
Yeah.
And then they've needed you to come in because we do think that we can do it ourselves. So it's fine. I don't need this professional help. And actually, that's exactly what we do need is that support and guidance.
I've done that a few times now, that people have steamed ahead with it and then got to a point where they've just gone, I don't understand the process.
Yeah,
you're like, all right, what have you done? Okay. Push that to one side. Let's sort this out, and then you can recover the project. That's always that's a nice feeling as well. When you get that, when you get the application granted, you got that email that comes through, and you just think, yeah, that was a job well done. And you phone the client up, and the relief in their voice is, oh, you got it passed. Thank goodness. We didn't think we were going to get it. We thought we'd mucked it up. No.
Our homes are so important. It sounds so obvious, but it is the most important thing, isn't it?
That's what I always say to people. It's really personal. Whatever I do to your house, whatever you do is personal to you. I might not like it, but to you, it's what you want. And it's all about this client thing again, client satisfaction. It's getting that over to someone. You can have what you want, but these are the parameters you've got to work within. And once you've done that,
I've got to ask you this question because I just saw how animated you were. Have you ever done a job where a client has gone, I want this, and you've gone, okay, and you've built it, and when you've built it exactly as they want it, they go, I don't like that.
I've been really lucky in that I've not, but I know a couple of architects that have had that happen, and they've gone, we really don't like it, and I'm like, I've not had that, so I've been really lucky. I think that might be because I've got my job and done my role in that design process.
Your due diligence, if you want to call it.
I've gone through it with them, and then you go, are you really sure you want to do that? And then you'll sketch it up and you'll send it to them, and they go, that looks terrible. Yeah, I know. It is, you're part of a team. You're looking after someone's hopes and expectations.
Yeah.
You're also trying to add value to the house.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to do is do something that's detrimental to them, to the house.
Yeah.
To, you know, it's a lifestyle thing. And you only one extension, and you've got to get it right.
Yeah.
It's a luxury item.
We really are running out of time, but there's so many things I want to ask you. But so I'm going to try and get these in quickly. Is there anything that people say, you know, look, I want to do this to the house, and you go, do you know what? That will destroy the value of the house. Yeah. You might like it, but it will make the house just not valuable.
You do that. If it tends to be people that want to do things that are oversized and too big, and you're like, no, that. You priced yourself out of the street. You're not going to get the value out of that.
Yeah.
And when you demonstrate it to them, and it comes back, showing them, explaining, and guiding them through, they rein it back in. So,
Right. Okay. It is a fascinating business.
It is
all
so,
of that, isn't
I could
it?
Talk about this forever because I love it.
And it is, our home is the most expensive thing we ever buy in our life. And it is you know, the thing that's most precious to us outside of our kids, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, I've got a question. Have you ever built something and it's gone ahead where the client absolutely loves it and you still look at it at the end and you think that's awful?
I can't say that.
Yeah,
there's one or two in the early days when you first start out. Oh yeah, I can do that, I can do that. And you go back and you drive past things sometimes and you think, I wouldn't have done that now.
I'm gonna pretend that wasn't me. There are
slight changes that are the in thing to do.
But at the end of the day, you know, if a client's demanded that you build something and you've designed it and had it built and the client's happy with it, what can you say? You know, well, that's what they wanted. Yeah. You've said it a few times, David. Your personal taste might not be the same as their personal taste.
The idea, I always try to meet the brief, but I always try to exceed the brief.
Yeah.
The expectation at the end.
David, if people want to find out more about NewCAD, how can they do that?
NewCAD.co.uk. I'll do that again since I was interrupted. www.newcad.co.uk or david@newcad.co.uk or 01233 640066.
Fantastic. The website details and everything are on the Kent Business Radio website, so you can also find it there. David, thank you so much for that. Really fascinating insight into architectural design and houses.
We'll do part two next month.
We'll carry on.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.